You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
The heart of where innovation, money, and power collide in Silicon Valley and beyond. This is Bloomberg Technology with Caroline Hyde and Ed Ludlow.
I'm Caroline Hyde at Bloomberg's World Headquarters in New York.
And I'm Ed Ludlow in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg Technology.
Coming up, Apple faces its worst start to the year in China. That's since the COVID pandemic, as new reports show sales fell by 19% in the first quarter.
Plus, the Senate is set to consider the $95 billion aid package that could lead to a nationwide ban on TikTok, if not divested. We'll go on the ground to Washington.
And we push ahead to Tesla earnings after the bell as investors brace for Musk to nix the rollout of a cheaper model and refocus on developing a robo-tax. Shares already suffering their longest rout since 2022. We'll discuss that and so much more throughout this hour. But even as we sit with much anticipation of the earnings to come, we managed to see some risk appetite in the market today. Maybe the bad news is good news from a macro perspective today. Maybe some of that business activity actually cooling off more than the market anticipated means, well, we decide to go into equities as we think the Federal Reserve maybe has more space to be cutting in the second half of the year. NASDAQ currently up 1.5%. But remember, we've been beaten up, particularly at the end of last week. Two-year yield, big auction, $69 billion worth, record amount coming to the market, yet still yields managing to be falling today. That's as we see money move into some of the havens. We're seeing 4.93, there or thereabouts. So interesting that we've got equities rallying and indeed bond markets rallying on this particular day. Stocks 600 over in Europe also having a stellar run on the moment. We're up a percentage point. Notably, UK, call out for them, the FTSE 100 currently at a new record high. That's actually as we see some of the haven stocks there actually do well amid some of the geopolitical tensions. We have a look overall at money moving in to both risk asset classes and indeed to good old Bitcoin. We're up 0.4% at the moment. We're currently at 66,849, so well off the highs, but still money coming in despite a relatively strong dollar. Ed, what have you got coming up on the micro?
Our earnings and a lot of individual tech names. Tesla's getting a boost ahead of earnings after the bell. We will play or get ready to play Tesla bingo. Tune in at the end of the show to find out what I'm talking about. Spotify, swing to profit, strong subscriber growth. Bloomberg's Ashley Carman's going to join us. This is a name that a lot of people watching. Look at the big jump in the shares. And then Adobe's higher. It's the one-year anniversary since Firefly was released. I think there's big questions about particularly text-to-video generation. We have a key interview with an Adobe executive. Then there's Apple. So Apple's interesting. We're now higher, maybe 0.4% in the session. We had opened lower, but basically we're trading at the same level on Apple we were 1 year ago. It has been a difficult start to the year, concerned principally about China. Third-party data, Counterpoint Research, shows that iPhone sales in China down 19%, 1.9. More interesting, perhaps, is the other data outside of Apple, showing domestic handset makers gaining market share. Apple has fallen to third, and it's on par with Huawei, which is kind of resurgent at the higher end of the smartphone market. The data doesn't seem to be worrying anyone right now. We continue to push higher in the session, but big picture ahead of earnings later on next week, Apple in focus. Let's talk to none other than Bloomberg's chief Apple correspondent, Mark Gurman. We stress third-party data. It is not Apple telling us this, but there's a bit of concern that China is still the key battleground and the iPhone is losing ground, Mark.
This is exactly what Wall Street and investors have been bracing for, another big decline in China. As you know, Apple had its biggest decline in a couple of years last quarter related to overall China sales. And now it looks like you're going to see another decline in China given this data from Counterpoint Research. Now, as I typically say, these data points are typically not exactly on the money, but they're usually directionally correct. So if they're telling us that iPhone sales in China are down by a fifth, I would believe that iPhone sales in China are down quite considerably, not maybe as bad as 19%, but in all likelihood, they're going to be down, bringing down the overall picture in China. Now, why is that particularly interesting? Because even though China had about a $2 billion decline in the prior quarter, Tim Cook on the earnings call said that's not because of the iPhone. It's because of Apple's other products that they sell in China. Well, this time around, it's likely because of the iPhone if these numbers are to be believed.
Let's talk about other products, because we've kind of got signaling on all of this before, IDC, another third-party data giving us a similar picture. What's new on the day, Mark, is that, well, May 7th, we've got a new event, and it's all around those new iPads.
Yeah, as I've been saying on here and on Power on the last several weeks, Apple is set to launch its biggest revamp to the iPad in over 5 years. You're going to see new versions of the iPad Air and the iPad Pro introduced on May 7th. They're going to play a video on their website. They're trying something new here, a video starting time of 7 a.m. versus the usual 10 a.m. And they're announcing this video well in advance. They've been trying some different things lately. Their usual cadence is to announce these things 7 days in advance. So now we're getting a full 2 weeks, which is quite interesting. Maybe they want a little bit more momentum leading into that. They're trying to see for these smaller scale launches if more advance notice brings in more people. So this is certainly something to look out for. New iPad Pro, new iPad Air, new Apple Pencil, new Magic Keyboards all coming about 1 month before they announce their new AI initiatives at the Worldwide Developers Conference in early June. So this is going to be significant. And the hope, if you're on Wall Street or a shareholder of the company, is that this is going to boost iPad sales, which have been down quite considerably the last several quarters due to a lack of any updates across 2023.
And therein lies a lot of the issue, a lack of update and certainly weakness in China. Mark Gurman, always telling us it first. We appreciate it. Meanwhile, let's continue the conversation now on basically where you should sit with Apple when you're an investor. Ayoko, you're sure. Portfolio Manager over at Wealth Enhancement Group, in the house with us. Ayoko, when you're looking at Apple, when you've seen some of the weakness, the worries about product updates, about perhaps behind the curve when it comes to AI, is this still such a solid name that you cannot avoid but to remain allocated to it, or do you start to take some risk off?
It's a great question, Caroline. So, you know, when we look at Apple, it is a great company. It's got a high quality balance sheet. There's so much cash on their balance sheet, and that allows them to buy back a lot of stock. It's a big position within the S&P 500 index. So it is difficult to not own it. And yet we do start to see some of these issues with Apple in terms of innovation and them being able to really bring new products that can continue to grow at the pace that they have been growing over the last several years.
And I think this is some of the tension we're seeing across the so-called Magnificent Seven, those that are deemed less than magnificent, for some still managing to do very well. When we're worried about a Tesla and Apple, which in many ways have very similar issues, China weakness, competition coming from China, worries about ultimately a lack of an update from a product, is it more therefore you have to look at valuations rather than trying to see a narrative as to when you get the next product?
I think it's the combination of both valuation and then just future growth. I think both Apple and Tesla are suffering from, you know, the issues that you talked about, and that's dampening their overall growth going forward. And so valuation for that lower growth is a little bit higher than everybody would like to pay.
Iarco, if the mega caps don't beat, what happens?
You know, I think there could be a little bit of another sort of sell-off in the market. We saw it last week and a half, you know, ever since the inflation print. And I think we do need to see a lot of these larger names, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Meta, they need to come out and show us that they can continue to grow at the pace that they can grow and show that free cash flow growth so that people can continue to rely on them for that quality growth.
Do you get the sense, Eriko, this is the quarter where we look past the AI hype and we start again to look at fundamentals? Did you have earnings growth? How is your free cash flow? Traditional boring things like that.
You know, I think it's going to be a combination of both, Ed. In terms of, you know, you have to produce those numbers. Those fundamentals are going to matter. But everybody wants to look at the future and say, well, can you continue to produce those quality numbers that we've seen? So AI continues to be, you know, a tailwind that everybody wants to see production out of and further continuance of that revenue and earnings growth.
When you are seeing such a run-up in big tech of late, how much are you thinking about the macro, thinking about the data that we got today?
Oh, absolutely. I think the macro always contributes to the overall market narrative. You know, the larger cap names just tend to be at the very, you know, top of the funnel, per se. And they are technically those long duration assets that everybody likes to talk about and are most impacted by higher interest rates. And so they are a crucial part of how we look at the overall macro as well as the individual stocks.
Let's do a case study, which is Spotify. It's an interesting subscriber and ad-based platform, profit and user growth. What does that tell you?
You know, Spotify has been on quite a tear over the last year. They've really focused on managing costs. And, you know, as, you know, everybody's seen with the results, those gross margin numbers were really eye-popping. You know, seeing those, the guidance for gross margin to continue higher at 28% next quarter is definitely something that we can continue to see with Spotify really, you know, generating that revenue and the earnings growth and managing the costs while they do that.
The stock on track for its biggest jump since October 2019. Eriko Yoshioka, Portfolio Manager at Wealth Enhancement Group. Thank you. Let's get back to Spotify earnings now. After the audio streaming giant swung to profit in the first quarter, Bloomberg's Ashley Carmen's here with the details, swung to profit and subscriber growth. What were behind those two things?
Over the past year, Spotify has really changed its business. Today on its earnings call, Daniel Ek, the CEO, called it the new Spotify. They reduced their costs significantly, particularly in their podcast business, which had been weighing on margins, and they've reduced their costs. They unfortunately did have to reduce their headcount quite a bit, but we're seeing that play out in that first quarter earnings for sure.
I mean, phenomenal move in shares, Ashley, and yet still some of the forecasts may be behind where the market had anticipated. Is this just such a feel-good factor around profitability finally?
Yeah, I think the investors are really thrilled to see that they're still growing their user base and their subscribers, that profitability. And I mean, it's worth noting that this is all happening while they've reduced the number of people working from them, as well as increasing prices around the world with more price increases to come. So I think investors are just feeling like there's a lot of opportunity here for them to continue growing and squeezing more revenue out of their users.
Something that happened in the current period was Taylor Swift happened. I know, I listened to the entire thing on Friday. Did they talk about that?
They did not. They did not talk about Taylor Swift, though I wish.
But more what they perhaps are talking about is their focus on audio from the book's perspective. Sure, they've been pulling back in podcasting, but they still kept their heavy hitters. I think of Joe Rogan. But what then of the ability to charge more for audiobooks in full, Ashley? That seems to be working.
Yes. So we had reported this last week, but Daniel Ek also mentioned this on the call today, that basically, you know, they introduced 15 hours of audiobook listening to subscribers in certain parts of the world. And of those users who have had the ability to play audiobooks, 25% of them have taken advantage of that offering. So what they're really seeing is adoption. And what they can do with that adoption, I mean, they could charge more. They can break out this audiobooks only tier, which they launched. I think it's giving them a lot of room to potentially play with the different subscription tiers, once again, giving them flexibility with their users and the revenue that they can get from them.
There's the opportunity. Investors love it. Ashley Carman, thanks so much for coming on, talking us through what is a key mover today. Meanwhile, sticking with earnings and those that are companies over in Europe, SAP says its current cloud backlog saw its fastest growth on record. This comes as Europe's biggest software firm is actually seeking to migrate customers from its legacy on-premise software to the cloud, where, of course, it gets to offer business AI services to sweeten that deal. We spoke to the CFO a little earlier today.
The advent of AI has clearly propelled the story of the transformation to the cloud to move our customers from their on-prem installations onto cloud, resulting in an uptick on a constant currency basis. And all that is driven really by the core offering we have in the cloud, which is called the Cloud ERP Suite. That offering has actually generated in excess of 30% growth for 9 quarters in a row now.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. Like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Time for Talking Tech. First up, Elon Musk's social network has been hit with an interim injunction by an Australian court to remove footage of a recent terrorist attack. In a hearing last night in Sydney, the Federal Court of Australia ordered X to hide all recordings of the attack until Wednesday. The court will then convene for a second hearing at a later date to determine the validity of a removal notice by the country's e-safety commissioner. Meanwhile, ASML is weighing options to expand its presence in the Netherlands. The move comes after the government committed $2.7 billion to infrastructure and education spending in the region. The company said it signed a letter of intent and the final decision is subject to ironing out a few crucial points. And Perplexity AI has raised about $63 million in a new funding round that values the company at more than $1 billion. Perplexity offers an AI chatbot that summarizes search results, lists citations for its answers, and helps users refine their queries to get the best responses. The financing doubles Perplexity's valuation from just 3 months ago. Caroline.
AI still so hot. Let's talk about AI in the context of Adobe now, because it's bringing more generative AI tools to Photoshop, powered by its Adobe Firefly Image 3 foundation model. Joining us now from their Max Creativity Conference over in London, David Wadhwani, Adobe Digital Media President. Welcome. And, you know, how is this incentivizing clients to pay more for Adobe? How are you seeing generative AI really bring about a revenue increase for the business?
Great to be here, Caroline. I think we have to put everything we're doing with generative AI in the context of what we've been doing over the last year. We first introduced generative AI a year ago, and in that period of time, we've added an imaging model, a vector model, which is another very important format for creative professionals, a design model. We've enabled customization of that content for their specific design needs or their assets that they work on. And we've exposed that in Photoshop and our Creative Cloud applications. applications. We've exposed it in Adobe Express for marketers and creative professionals and solopreneurs. And we've exposed it as APIs for a broad base of automation workflows. And what this has really done is it's supercharged content creation. If you're a creative pro, you can produce that content much more effectively and much more quickly. If you're trying to automate workflows, you can do that with your existing environments that you have. And if you're a marketer, you can react more quickly to anything that's happening on social. So it's really empowered businesses to operate at another level of scale.
I want to talk about scale and the difficulty, ultimately, of feeding data into foundational models at the moment. You've just been unveiling sort of the new foundational model, and I'm interested in just what's going in, because what set you apart, particularly in the narrative of Adobe, is that you're safer because you are building basically upon your own data, your own, well, images that you own, your stock. But then there was some reporting from Bloomberg, ultimately, that you're having to use synthetic data, which is sometimes used from rival AI, well, image generators. Can you just tell us about how clients are responding to really what your data is being trained on right now?
Yeah, we are, I think, without a doubt, the most responsible training model in the market. We've been very clear that we have full license rights for everything that we've trained on. We have a process that we internally call ART, which is about accountability, responsibility, and transparency. So everything we generate and any model before it ships goes through this process. We have a moderation system in place so that we make sure any content that comes in does not have or is not encumbered with any misappropriated IP rights. And so customers have been very, very clear with us is that there's a lot of interesting work going on around the industry, around AI models. But when it comes to true production systems, we're really at the top of the marks in terms of the ability to actually use this to create and ship content that's generated with these models.
David, there is only one single question that's being directed at Adobe right now, which is when and in what form will you have a text-to-video generation platform akin to Sora?
Yeah, I don't know if you had a chance to see the announcements we made last week at the National American Broadcasters video series. We announced and we talked about how we actually gave a sneak of our text-to-video capabilities as part of that. We also announced that we're working with Sora, that we're working with Runway and with Pika, and together all of these capabilities are going to be embedded in all of our creative applications. What's really exciting about all this text-to-video capability is that we have the ability now to look at this and say, all of this generative capabilities is analogous to more cameras in the world. And the more content that gets created, the more content comes into our systems for editing. We've also been just as clear our technology for video, the architecture and the research that's gone into it is very similar to what you see out of Sora and others, and that we expect to have our model in market later this year.
The strategy in Premiere, and when I was at journalism school, I trained on Premiere, so it's interesting full circle. You are going to use third-party models, and so far Photoshop has not had the extension of that strategy. Just explain why and what you'll do going forward.
We are going to embrace all models. Photoshop, you will see, again, later this year, you will see support for any model that can be integrated into Photoshop will be integrated into Photoshop. But we also recognize that each model has its own personality. And at any given moment, what you generate in one model versus another model, there might be varying preferences. The one thing that we know is that Firefly is going to be, synonymous with the best quality of content, with the best detail of content, and with the most controllability of that content that's generated in particular. And that means that whatever we create with Firefly can get more deeply embedded in our tools. As Caroline mentioned, we just had an enormous set of announcements in terms of dozens of new capabilities of AI generation embedded in our tools and workflows, and it's because of the way we build Firefly. But we are embracing third-party models, and we anticipate and expect to integrate those in our tools as well.
David Wadhwani, Adobe Digital Media President. Great to have you on. We're marking 1 year, believe it or not, since Firefly. Appreciate it. Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. Ed Ludlow in San Francisco.
Caroline Hyde in New York. Let's get a quick check on your markets because, well, we got a little bit of money back into the tech sector after what has been beaten up over the last few trading days. Money 1.4% higher on the NASDAQ 100. We are all bracing for the earnings narrative that comes out thick and fast for the rest of the week. And so far, we're seeing a little bit of buying the dip that we've seen in some of the tech names that have been beaten up, certainly from Friday into Monday, now Tuesday. NASDAQ 100 higher. We're seeing the two-year yield auction. We're looking at two-year yield currently down by almost 4 basis points ahead of that all-important $69 billion auction of two-year bonds. FTSE is at a record high. Europe having a good day too. Moving on, have a look at some of the individual movers as we do anticipate some big earnings narratives for this week. I want to shine a light on NVIDIA. Yes, it was down 10% on Friday, but Monday it got bought the dip. Tuesday they're buying the dip again. We're up 3.7%, so managing to whittle away some of those losses that extended to more than $200 billion worth of market cap lost on Friday. I'm looking also at what's happening in Microsoft. Up 1.4%. Yes, we get their earnings later, but we're also anticipating, well, still their focus on artificial intelligence of their own building. They've got a smaller model that they've announced today built by Microsoft's own AI researchers, and that's going to be able to be adopted, foundational model use, more on your actual devices. What does that mean? It's an open source model as well, so interesting as they continue to basically create, even with their close relationship with the likes of Mistral and indeed, of course, of OpenAI. I'm looking at what's happening on Instacart, down heavily, down by more than 7%. This is, as we understand, Amazon is going to be, well, getting into the world of grocery delivery. It's not always worked that well before, Ed, but still, this is the bread and butter of Instacart. It is feeling some of the competitive threat, even though analysts say, look, there's room enough for more. Ed, what have you got in the micro?
Away from some of the public names, there's a private name that is top of mind for everyone, and that is TikTok and the legislation involving TikTok, which would bar the social platform from operating in the US if its China-based owner doesn't sell its stake within a year. Bloomberg's Kaylee Lyons is here from DC for more on the bill on its way to the Senate. So my understanding is today that there's kind of a next procedural step before the kind of main event. What's going to happen?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. This is the United States Senate, in which procedure does loom large. So what really needs to happen in order to get to a final passage vote is first it must pass the cloture vote that will begin later this afternoon. Votes beginning around 1 p.m. Eastern time. 60 votes will be needed in order to advance this. And then it's going to be a question of how much debate there is over this package, which, yes, does include the TikTok divestor ban bill, but it's part of a much wider bill that has $95 billion in foreign aid for U.S. allies. So that is why a lot of senators may end up voting for this bill, whether or not they've been advocates for this kind of legislation around TikTok in the past. Keep in mind that a very similar bill that didn't have TikTok included already had passed the Senate by a vote of 74 months ago. So it's highly likely that this ultimately will pass during final passage. It really is just a question of when, how much disruption we could see from the likes of Republican Senator Rand Paul or even Democratic Senator Bernie Sanders. But the way the procedure goes is once this cloture vote happens, there will be a maximum of 30 hours of debate after that. So this is highly likely to pass the Senate, if not today, by Wednesday at the latest. It's worth keeping in mind that they are supposed to be on recess this week, so it's likely that a lot of senators are eager to get out of Washington and go actually take their time off in their districts. But then, of course, it becomes a question of what happens after this gets President Biden's signature, because not only does this give TikTok potentially a year to work on this divestiture, it also, we understand, plans to fight this in court. There is likely to be a long legal battle that will play out, and then a lot of remaining questions, including whether or not China would actually sign off on any divestiture of ByteDance and the TikTok U.S. operation, what happens to the algorithm, who would be able to buy this business without running into antitrust issues. A lot of questions will still remain after today, Caroline.
Kaylee, and I therefore ask a question on the sentiment you're hearing from the people you speak to on Capitol Hill about what this means for China and the U.S., what this means for other Chinese businesses looking to, well, continue to expand in the U.S. I think of PDD and Temu.
Yeah, that's a very real concern, Caroline. Those who were more opposed to this legislation when it first passed the House, keeping in mind that initially it was a bill that would see TikTok need to be divested within a six-month period, you did have some critics, including the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, Senator Maria Cantwell, talking about how that timeline seemed unrealistic. There were also others who were calling attention to the fact that this is a piece of legislation targeting a private business and what kind of precedent that may set if the U.S. is suddenly pursuing that kind of policy. By and large, though, it does seem that especially among the intelligence and national security community, they are much more concerned with those national security issues around data privacy, the way in which the Chinese government may be able to access user data from the well over 100 million Americans who are on this platform, and also on the propagation of mis- or disinformation that could be on this platform in the run-up to the election. And it's worth keeping in mind with the timeline that is set in this new piece of legislation, which would be divestiture between 9 months up to a year should the president choose. That will take us well beyond the vote in November.
Articulately put, Katie Lyons, with all the procedural events and indeed what this has impact longer term, we thank you. Let's get more of a deep dive on all of this. Doug Kalidas is with us. He's former chief of staff to Senator Amy Klobuchar and now a fellow at the Harvard Belfer Center, where he focuses on U.S. tech policy. In particular, you're thinking around thoughtful AI policy with Americans' responsible innovation. Doug, I'm interested as to the nuance here of promoting innovation at the same time as promoting safety. And will this ultimately see less social media competition here in the US? And what does that mean for innovation?
I think the TikTok is really a unique case. You know, it's a case where we're looking at, you know, most policymakers want to foster competition. They also have great respect for First Amendment rights of free expression. But on both sides of the aisle, you've seen the argument made that TikTok is a unique national security threat. And I think when the intelligence community comes together and makes the case that this is a step that needs to be taken for national security, policymakers by and large will listen. I also think it's likely that this type of ban will hold up in the courts for that very reason, but time will tell.
Doug, in the divest and ban, let's go with the ban scenario. You are a student of U.S. technology policy. You have a CV that shows you understand the organs of government. You explain to me how you get 150 million Americans to not use TikTok in a 12-month timeline.
You know, the way that the legislation works, it wouldn't be an immediate on-off switch. You would have the App Store be unable to update the app, and what makes TikTok so great is that it's so user-friendly. So over time, it would degrade, and people would move to other things. I agree that if there is no divestiture, and this moves to a ban, there would be a large public outcry, but I believe that Congress would be able to make the case, okay, we gave a full year of notice, we made it so everything was in place for a divestiture, and they've tried to make this painfully clear. And if there isn't a divestiture, the question is why. I think there will definitely be buyers. There may be antitrust concerns, but I believe that antitrust regulators will be cognizant of the fact that this is a forced sale and really try to be conducive to making it happen. It seems likely that the Chinese government has said that they are not going to be okay with this and they're going to stand in the way. And if the Chinese Communist Party is standing in the way of a divestiture, then I think that just makes the case for the law even more clear, and Congress really will have wind at its back in terms of public opinion. But I agree, it could be messy. There are a lot of people who really rely on TikTok for their livelihood, and if there isn't a divestiture and a ban goes through, there's going to be a lot of pain. But there are other options, and I think this is something that Congress believes is worth it in the long run, even though it could be difficult.
Doug, talk to us about the other options and whether there are enough of them. Some of the sudden question marks about how swiftly a potential ban or divest would go through was because former President Trump suddenly started highlighting concerns around Meta ultimately becoming more powerful in his mind's eye without a TikTok. Is that a concern for you? Do you think there's enough competition out there? Do you think just more will be bred?
That is a concern. I believe that with Instagram and with Facebook, you know, Meta really does have, you know, a major position here, and they will be well poised to consolidate control if TikTok is taken off the table. And I think that's something that a lot of policymakers don't want to see. But here, because of the national security concerns, they're willing to countenance that possibly happening. There are other also, competitors in the space. We could see things spring up. I think that, you know, TikTok's really became a phenomenon because its algorithm is so good and it gave users what they wanted. But that's not secret now. I mean, the algorithm itself is secret, but what they're using to try to drive engagement and really make it fun and easy to use and very social are things that other social platforms can copy now. And if TikTok were no longer a competitor, then I think you would see other apps spring up to try to do the same thing.
Doug, finally, go back to your experience of advising a senator. Put that hat on. What is the benefit to a lawmaker going strong on the anti-China rationale of doing this if their constituents are saying, hey, I love TikTok, I use TikTok? They have to then go back and explain why they're doing this, all told, ahead of an election cycle.
You're right, that's difficult. And I think the reason it works is because the leading lawmakers all held hands and said this is something we really care about. The bill came through the House committee unanimously with no one opposing. That almost never happens. And that shows how broad the support is. The vote in the House was very strong. You had some members on the far right and the far left who opposed, but most of them voted for it. And you're going to see a similar thing here in the Senate. And, you know, if there's one thing that lawmakers like, it's political cover. And when they can actually hold hands and do something difficult all together, it makes it much easier for each one of them to go back to their district and sell it to the constituents as something that needed to be done.
From the political to the tech policy, Doug, I think you are well placed to explain all of that to us. Doug Kalidas, Harvard Belfer Center Fellow, of course, Chief of Staff for Amy Klobuchar previously. Okay, coming up, Apple sales in China slide in the country as the company faces its worst start to the year since COVID. That's according to some third-party data. We'll talk about that again next. Carrie.
Let's just look at shares of other social media companies right now, Trump Media and technology in particular. Now, we understand the blank check deal has brought Donald Trump's media startup public. It's now going to give him another $1.3 billion in stock after meeting certain targets. Now, these sorts of sweeteners, they're common and as part of these special purpose acquisition companies, these SPAC deals. But ultimately, with 36 million in additional shares earmarked for him, bring a total position to nearly 115 million shares, currently down by some 9% on Trump Media and Tech. This is Bloomberg Technology.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Okay, let's get back to Apple. iPhone sales fell in China by 19% during the March quarter, worst performance in that market since 2020, according to data from independent research firm Counterpoint. Bloomberg Intelligence analyst Anurag Rana is here to give his thesis. I'd note that the stock actually, even with the perceived negative headline, isn't reacting negatively. I guess maybe that's because it's a situation we've been aware of for a little while.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So one of the numbers I will request you to remember is IDC came out a little while ago, a couple of weeks ago, and said the global shipments are down about 10% for Apple. So I think a lot of what we see today is already accounted for in that big number. So it's going to be fun to see what happens next week when Apple reports. And our eyes are mostly on the guidance for 3Q or the next quarter, more than what's happening in the current quarter.
Interesting. For the current quarter, just to remind our viewers, we're expecting, what, a 5% decrease in overall revenues. That's according to our earnings expectations over at Bloomberg when they consolidate all of the analysts. But for the next quarter after that, there's going to be growth, 2% growth there or thereabouts. What drives that? Is this the new unveiling of certain iPads that we're likely to get May 7th?
So that's where we think there could be, you know, maybe a little bit of a risk in terms of estimates coming down. Because when you look at estimates right now, iPhone estimates for the current quarter or the results that's coming out next week is iPhone revenue down 11%. Now, we think if the shipments were down 10%, then the iPhone revenue may be slightly better than that, in a sense that it could be down, you know, 8-9% or so, because we all know that the Pro Max model is doing well and it has higher price, so the ASP goes up. For next quarter, we are looking at iPhone's revenue down just 2%. Now, if the stuff that's happening in China continues, then that number could go down. I think that's where a little bit of a risk is in terms of forward estimates for Apple, and that's going to be the biggest thing that we follow, is what is company going to say about the reception of the phone in for the next quarter.
May 2nd. Love that you push us forward to that and the earnings after the bell. Anurag Rana of Bloomberg Intelligence on all things Apple. We so appreciate his expertise.
Quick news story. Elon Musk's social platform X is launching a TV app, pushing deeper into video as it takes on the likes of YouTube. X didn't confirm a date for the platform's release, but said it would be, quote, coming soon to most smart TVs. The company also talked about the ability to cast video from smartphones to bigger TV screens through the app, a move that, of course, Google and Amazon have made in recent months as well. Caroline.
Yeah, let's stick on all things Elon Musk for a moment. It's time for Tesla earnings bingo card game from the Elon Inc. podcast team over at Businessweek. And here with us for more, none other than Bloomberg Businessweek's Max Chafkin. We're doing it again. You did it in the previous earnings, and there were all sorts of fun things that you had to sort of shout bingo, whether he's saying union, whether he's saying Tesla is an AI company, whether he's saying dojo. This time, I'm pretty sure robotaxi is going to be one of those key bingo words.
Robotaxi is there. We've got a few others. We've got horse up there. I believe it's in 01, which is a reference to the fact that Elon said owning a non-robotaxi would be like owning a horse in 15 years. We'll see if he says that on the earnings call. It should be, obviously this is a huge earnings day for Tesla. A lot of dark news going on, but we're trying to keep it light.
Max, I think we should be honest with the audience that you and I have come in for a bit of stick on social media about some of the selections we made. That's okay. This is specific to this earnings call. You and I have been trying to guess the likely outcome, the row. Your thinking right now, please.
Well, I think you gotta look at the central square. That's the free space, of course, for regular bingo players. I think the end line going down looks pretty promising. You've got interest rates, obviously been a huge issue. Grok, Elon Musk, has mentioned the possibility of integrating Twitter's AI assistant in the Tesla cars. Reasonably optimistic. He says that all the time. And, of course, advertising, which has been a big issue for Tesla late because they've had these demand challenges. So that's my pick.
Your pick. I mean, I want to know how close anyone came last time. It wasn't an out-and-out win on some of the choices. Which ones are you a little bit more concerned that might not be coming up?
We got pretty close last time. I think in a good bingo game, you don't want it to be a gimme. You want a little bit of tension. I think balls to the wall, which was Elon Musk's phrase for how they're approaching robotaxi. I would be surprised if that appears during this earnings call, although Elon Musk loves these kind of extremely hardcore, these metaphors that convey just how hard he's pushing, so you never know. That would be I-5 for those who are playing at home, by the way.
Okay, let's look at the bingo card a final time, but there is a serious point to this, that actually investors have a lot of questions, and there is a lot of unknown. You and I tried to go over this on the Elon Inc. podcast due out this afternoon, and robotaxi is at the heart of it. I get the sense, Max, that Musk has been busy for a few months. He's come back to Tesla, and he's decided to focus, having realized that things weren't to his liking at that company. Your take, please.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is certainly what's going on. I mean, just looking at his social media handle, you can see that his attention has been elsewhere. And it's, you know, it's understandable that he'd come back or sort of snap into focus and see a company that in many ways seems to be in crisis. You know, we've seen the stock fall pretty dramatically over the first few months of the year. You know, these huge issues with inventory piling up, questions about demand. So there are things to worry about. And he is leaning into robotaxi. Taxis, as you said, Ed, because, of course, that is this kind of like huge bet, which Elon Musk likes, that could potentially turn this whole thing around, that could really separate Tesla from some of these other electric cars that are coming to market right now and that, you know, people are getting excited about, are also getting good reviews.
Max, for our millions of Bloomberg Technology audience members around the world, make the case for why they should follow us along during earnings and how they can follow along this evening.
So you can follow along on the Bloomberg.com live blog, on the terminal. Ed and I will be playing this game, you know, like crazy on social, and hopefully offering, you know, while we have fun, offering some, you know, half-decent commentary to help you process this. Because, of course, this is a huge company. This is a big issue. This is one of the largest companies in the world by market cap. And where Elon Musk goes from here is going to affect us all. So we'll be paying attention to that as well.
Certainly with share prices so, well, under pressure, to say the very least this year, all important for those investors. Bloomberg Business Week's Master African making light of what will be a very serious earnings call. The Elon Inc. podcast drops later today. Go check it out with our own Ed Ludlow on it. Meanwhile, some breaking news from you coming regarding TikTok. This is about, Ed, the EU's focus on TikTok. Now, EU had issued TikTok basically 24 hours to be able to send over a risk assessment for its new app, that's TikTok Lite, which it had issued in Spain and France. Now, we understand that ByteDance says it has sent a TikTok Lite risk assessment report to the EU. All of this just highlighting the ongoing regulatory focus for this particular social media company that opened a new probe the EU had on Monday, basically threatening fines of up to like 1% of total annual income if they didn't give a particular risk assessment for TikTok Lite. They say it potentially violated the bloc's new content law when it was launched overall. Remember, this is kind of like a less heavy from a memory perspective version of TikTok, but also it pays you to play, and there were some addiction worries coming from Thierry Breton over in the EU. So all eyes on TikTok later today here in the United States as well, that all-important discussion in the Senate. But for now, that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology.
Don't forget to recap on the podcast. Earnings season's kicked off in earnest. I know we're very excited about the mega cap names and Tesla, but Spotify, my goodness, what a great report from Ashley Carman out of New York City. We're publishing the pod to Apple, Spotify, iHeart, and of course, all of the Bloomberg platforms. From San Francisco and New York City, this is Bloomberg Technology.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.